regulation after regulation.
I think there are outdated regulations that need to be
new
changed.
New government regulations, which were created to protect
the
employees.
The regulations are
$1.8 trillion.
There's a regulation that doesn't make any sense. Why do you keep
it? Is this really the best we can do?
Welcome to the Regulatory Transparency Project's fourth branch podcast series. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Regulatory Transparency Project Explainer podcast. I'm Jennifer Huddleston, and I am the Director of Technology and Innovation Policy at American Action Forum.
Good afternoon. My name's Brent Scorp. I want to thank Jennifer. And I'm a Senior Research Fellow at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. And my research areas include telecommunications, privacy, and transportation technology.
So what we're here to talk about today is contact tracing. This has been one of those elements of technology that's been in the news a lot lately with regards to the COVID-19 pandemic. And part of this is that some people have raised privacy concerns around this technology and around potential applications of it. Is it something that we should be concerned about, particularly from a civil liberties perspective? So today, Brent and I are going to talk about some of the advantages of this kind of technology, some of those concerns, as well as some of the ways they can potentially be addressed, and how this fits into the broader debate around privacy, security, and technology. So to get started with, Brent, can you explain what do we mean when we talk about contact tracing technology?
So contact tracing is a traditional method in public health surveillance and pandemic response, where public health authorities will, once they know someone has an infection, virus, and in today's climate, obviously COVID-19, they will attempt to find out who else that person was exposed to, so that they can warn, say, family members or coworkers that they recently came in contact with someone with a contagious disease, and encourage those people to be alert and if necessary, take appropriate steps like self-isolation or self-quarantine. And you're seeing nations around the world doing an immense amount of contact tracing, some more successfully than others, and technology has been brought to bear on this. So for the first time, for a global pandemic, we have technology that could assist with contact tracing, and some nations are using quite actively technology, and those technologies in particular are geolocation and Bluetooth. So almost all of us have smartphones, and these have geolocation features, GPS features, and also Bluetooth technology, and they're a little different, but geolocation can estimate where you are within a few meters, and Bluetooth can let you know when you're in proximity with someone else with Bluetooth on. And so some tech companies and some public health authorities are trying to use these technologies to help them scale up their contact tracing during this COVID-19 crisis.
For example, we recently saw an announcement about an app that would be available both through Google and Apple that is designed using this Bluetooth element to allow people to opt into a contact tracing model. And that's a little different than some of the other countries and the technologies that they've been using. There's also a lot going on in different places. As you mentioned, we've seen Israel take steps. South Korea certainly took steps that have a different climate than the U.S. does when it comes to contact tracing and individual privacy. We've also seen some questions raised about countries that may have other privacy laws, and how would it be possible to have a contact tracing application that follows the general data protection rule in Europe that has a lot more restrictions around some of these kinds of data. There certainly are potential benefits of these applications when it comes to being able to maybe lift some of the stay-at-home orders, to know where to target resources, to be able to identify who might need testing and who might have been exposed in a way that makes it easier for public health officials to have the necessary information to engage in good containment strategies, and also to potentially know how different policies are working. Are we seeing the responses that we need? Brent, can you think of any other advantages of this kind of technology?
I think the primary one, which you mentioned, I mean, is this idea of allowing public health officials to scale up contact tracing quickly. So the Economist had a story recently about how the CDC in South Korea is using contact tracing. And I believe they're using a combination of geolocation and maybe Bluetooth as well. But in South Korea, according to this Economist story, by giving public health officials access to what they call a smart city database, they reduced the amount of contact tracing time from 24 hours to 10 minutes, and which is really impressive. The story didn't have too many details, but that's a really impressive efficiency gain from the public health authorities in Korea to identify people who have been in contact with contagious people. And so there's reason for optimism. The question is, in the U.S., we're very different than South Korea in a lot of ways. We have different institutions. We have a different constitution. We have different privacy norms. And from a COVID-19 standpoint, we just have a much bigger problem. It's spread a lot to a lot more people than it has in Korea. So there's a question of, would it do any good to have people using, say, contact tracing apps or geolocation apps? And that's an open question. And that's, I don't have any strong feelings about whether we should do this. I mean, frankly, I think most people feel like we're flying blind on this. But I am somewhat optimistic about the use of this technology to give public health officials just another tool and possibly a scalable tool, particularly when, and you mentioned this, Apple and Google are working together on an API, on operating system software that public health officials can use. So, and this will be coming out this month, and I'm sure we'll see a lot more news about this, but there's small reason for optimism, but there is this open question of, what are the privacy concerns? Will this get out of control? And how do we claw back whatever privacy we give up during this pandemic?
You brought up the fact that there can be different privacy norms when it comes to the U.S. especially. And there are also differences in privacy itself that are really important to point out here. So there's the question of in data privacy when it always comes to, should there be any limitations on what individuals can do with regards to a company? Should there be limitations on what a company can do with an individual's data once they have opted in? Do we need opt-in versus opt-out when it comes to kind of these consumer to company relationships? But then when it comes to an issue like this, there's also a lot of questions about what, if any, restrictions should there be on the government's use of data? And these are kind of more grounded in that traditional civil liberties framework that we have. The question of, at what point does this type of surveillance, does this amount to government surveillance? And at what point is it really kind of an intrusion into the sanctity of the home? I think we've seen some concerns about this, particularly with regards to potential GPS tracking. There's various case law at play when it comes to GPS tracking. There's also a lot of other factors when it comes to the potential public health benefits of this that it kind of raises a lot of questions of, what are those civil liberties concerns and how can we balance them out?
Yeah, and that's why I think there's been so much interest in this contact tracing idea in the last few weeks. And again, we're going to see more analysis and more commentary once the Google Apple API comes out. And in my from what I can tell, Google and Apple will not be operating the apps. They will allow public health authorities throughout the world, and in the U.S., I expect that would be state and county governments, to create their own apps using the API from Google and Apple. The technology, the server backend that will be run by the public health authorities. That's my impression, and there are, this is novel. These raise novel questions for all of us. The apps as Google and Apple have designed them require consumer consent. So you have to opt into this. It's not entirely clear to me if a public health authority could modify the API. And I'm not that I've heard any interest in public health authorities in mandating this, but it's plausible. But if it is user consent, there's not a Fourth Amendment issue if you consent to use an app to reveal your geolocation, to reveal your proximity. There's not a Fourth Amendment issue, but we'll see how these apps turn out. And as I said, countries all over the world are using these, and I know European regulators they want to have access to who volunteers that they're infected. Under the current Google and Apple plans, this would be public health authorities would not know who's infected, but public health authorities want to know that. Time will tell. These are interesting questions. Yeah, under the Fourth Amendment, we have protection from unreasonable search and seizure, and in a pandemic, courts will be a little more deferential to public health agencies, but it's not clear how far they'll let them go in these circumstances when there's a lot we don't know about COVID-19 and how it spreads.
I think there's also a balanced approach that can be taken here, and an approach that can allow some of these real benefits of being able to have these apps available, to being able to have public health officials able to make more data-driven decisions that could benefit both individuals as well as policymakers. But at the same time, there are some kind of basic guardrails, so to speak, that could help assuage some of these concerns about civil liberties. It's completely legitimate to be concerned about the future potential of government surveillance. And so I think the people raising these civil liberties concerns may be looking at what are the risks of if something like this could be abused by the government or never got the proper checks and balances. So some of those checks and balances that policymakers could consider is, when is it possible to use anonymized data? What is the actual granularity of the data needed to make those public health decisions? Additionally, looking at, is it more privacy sensitive to use Bluetooth as opposed to perhaps GPS location information? And then looking at some kind of good regulatory policy. I mean, we're on a regulatory transparency podcast after all. So I think it's important to look at the regulatory structure that could provide some guardrails to protect civil liberties on something like contact tracing apps. So this could include things like having sunset provisions that require there to be further discussion to government access or public health official access to the data on these apps that is collected. It could include limitations that specifically state that this data can only be used for COVID-19 related purposes or for pandemic planning purposes, really limiting the use. And it could also be making sure that there are appropriate sunsets when it comes to the length of the law, to the period that data is being collected, and to the anonymization of the data. Is there a way to do this in an aggregated form at times as well, as opposed to a disaggregated form that may make it more easy to identify specific individuals.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, and you touched on kind of my major concern, which is, you know, things that are done during an emergency by the government, there tends to be a one-way ratchet effect where an emergency happens and the government takes actions. And then the immediate crisis ends, but the emergency actions and government response remains in place. And so that's a concern. And also just, you know, a greater concern about consumers becoming acclimated to, you know, fairly intrusive public health surveillance. I don't know how. It's hard to know how concerned we should be about all of this, just because there's still so much we don't know about COVID-19. But this one-way ratchet effect is concerning, and this acclimation by the public and by public health officials that you know, this gives pretext to have more intrusive look and to see geolocation information or proximity location from Bluetooth devices. You know, it's possible, you know, my concerns, I think our concerns are overblown. As I said, that all the plans put forward at this point for the Bluetooth applications and the geolocation apps for contact tracing, these are voluntary. I haven't heard of public health officials wanting to mandate this. There is some. States do have authority to do quarantines and self-isolation. States have been doing this for 200 years, and some cities and states are using apps to enforce quarantines. But on the contact tracing issue, you know, this idea, I think it's attractive to a lot of people. You have an app running, and if you come in contact with someone who later tests positive, you receive a notification that you were exposed to someone who tested positive. I think a lot of people would want that information, and I think many people will take up the public health apps that come out in the next few weeks. But we're all learning about this in real time, and learning about the privacy issues and Fourth Amendment issues in real time, which is why we need to have conversations like the one we're having right now, and understand how the technology works and what the risks are.
You're right. We are really having these conversations very quickly and in real time. I will say, I think one of the advantages of an overall regulatory framework that really enables innovation is that ideally, if this is something that's useful, the apps are able to be developed in very quick time with very little barriers to entry. And so when we start thinking about what additional regulations are needed, we want to make sure that we're focusing on regulations that are truly needed to prevent these kind of civil liberties abuses we're concerned about, or to prevent, you know, real serious harm, and not regulations that may just create additional barriers for someone who is really trying to do something very beneficial. I think you also bring up a really good point, Brent, about that these apps, as they've been discussed in the United States, have really been voluntary and have been opt-in systems where an individual would opt into being notified or would opt into sharing the information that they had a diagnosis and having that sent to other people that had also opted in. What's interesting there is one of the other concerns some people expressed early on was would there be kind of a way to game the system? If I went to, you know, be a bad actor and use this app, would I be able to use it to claim that I had a diagnosis and go in and, you know, put in a false diagnosis to cause some sort of disruption? And very quickly, we've seen responses that, you know, they're working with public health officials to be able to verify these sorts of things, that there wouldn't be just kind of a kind of writ large way to necessarily do that right now, at least, or that's not the plan. The other thing is, again, with these apps, as they've been discussed in the US right now, is once you get that notification, it's also up to you as a receiver of a notification to decide what steps to take. And just like with any of the kind of social distancing practices, that may look different in different communities. That may look different depending on public health guidance at that particular moment.
Okay. Yeah, and I would add, I mean, just, you know, in the future, some future issues I'm thinking about, you know, in addition to Bluetooth contact tracing is, you know, what is the potential of quarantine enforcement with geolocation, GPS, which several countries are doing, Poland, Iceland, South Korea, Taiwan. And, you know, could that happen in the U.S.? What would that look like? What would be the protections to prevent abuses? And, you know, we on contact tracing, NPR had a story recently about they tried to find out how many contact tracers there are in the United States, and they I think they found fewer than 10,000. There's probably around 8,000, I think they tracked down. And there's estimates we need 180,000 to have an effective contact tracing. So I think public health officials will be looking for all tools available. And then finally, I mean, just this issue of an immunity passport or a health passport, which has been bandied about. A few weeks ago, Emirates Airlines had every passenger on a flight take a 10-minute COVID-19 blood test, and only after testing negative were people allowed on the flight. You know, could this expand to private office buildings and churches and public transportation? And, you know, if private operators are doing it, there wouldn't seem to be a constitutional issue, but I think there'd be reason to be concerned about kind of this widespread testing. But, you know, that's conversation for another podcast. But, you know, there's just a lot going on, and technology is right at the center of it.
Technology has certainly been at the center of a lot of the responses to COVID-19, whether it's in the potential applications like this that we're talking about, or whether it's the fact that we are currently recording this podcast each from our respective homes because of some of the technology that we have available to ourselves now. I think it's interesting, not only how does do some of these conversations around these potential contact tracing apps relate to other potential COVID-19 related privacy conversations you just brought up, but also how does this relate to the broader context of data privacy? What lessons might we learn from these conversations that can be applied to other technologies as they develop that might have similar questions? So while it won't necessarily be the same as what's going on in a crisis and what's going on with contact tracing, we can see similar questions regarding civil liberties potentially arising out of various emerging technologies, whether it's the GPS information of a driverless car, or whether it is calls for cities to have access to the data on scooters or e-bikes. There are a lot of other interesting connected device questions that are going to arise that some of these debates about civil liberties now may be able to inform us in the future.
Yeah, and frankly, I think this pandemic, I think it'll make people more accepting and probably more knowledgeable about the power of these apps and what these apps can do. And, you know, for right now, and this could change in the upcoming weeks, people largely support a public response, a strong public response. Polling suggests that 70-80% of people favor stay-at-home orders right now. And I think people are split about 50-50 about mandated quarantine. So people are favoring, you know, strong public response, something I wouldn't have predicted 3 months ago. But obviously we're in a whole new world right now.
I think the other thing when we have these conversations around things like GPS location data and Bluetooth uses, it's also important to take that step back and think about all the benefits that this type of data has also brought us both during and beyond the pandemic as well. So for example, think about how much easier your life is because of GPS apps on your phone, because you can use Waze when you get in your car once you start going back to work to find that least trafficked way. Think about all the, you know, different things that you can do thanks to Bluetooth, thanks to this improved connectivity and data usage. I think it's important not to vilify the collection of certain types of data or to assume that the collection of a certain type of data automatically should raise concerns.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, in just the smartphone economy shows that people have very different tolerances for what they'll reveal to private companies and what they're comfortable revealing. And some people, like using Find My Friends and these geolocation services and mapping. But there are others who are very private about that sort of thing. In the current crisis, and this has been the challenge, balancing, we want to give public health officials all the tools we have available, but we also know, again, that there's this one-way ratchet effect where once public officials have authority to do something, they're not really keen to relent and release it.
Absolutely. That certainly is a concern. And I think that, it's very good that we're having these conversations now. Brent, before I can close it out, was there any kind of topic we didn't discuss that you wanted to discuss?
No, I would just reiterate, we're having these conversations in real time, and the Federalist Society is giving people a platform to talk about these and think about these, and we need more analysis. I mean, this is happening. As I said, in the next few weeks, public health authorities will be rolling out applications with proximity sensors. And it looks like there'll be an opt-in basis, but there are privacy norms and constitutional norms that will come into play. And it's important that we all approach this with our eyes wide open about the benefits and the risks. And so I want to thank you and the Federalist Society for putting this conversation together.
I think you bring up a great point, and I think that's something to really emphasize, is whenever we're having these conversations around privacy, it's important to really consider the trade-offs and to really engage in these analyses, whether it's privacy in the context of civil liberties or even looking at the potential impact of various other privacy regulation. I know I've been a part of some Federalist Society, RTP podcasts that have certainly discussed that before. So thanks for virtually joining me this afternoon, Brent. And it's always good to talk about a timely topic. And maybe the two of us will have to hop on and record another one when these apps are more available and this kind of potential opt-in system goes live in a couple of weeks.
I look forward to it. Thank you.
On behalf of the Federal Society's Regulatory Transparency Project, thanks for tuning in to the Fourth Branch Podcast. To catch every new episode when it's released, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spreaker. For the latest from RTP, please visit our website at regproject.org. That's regproject.org.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.